This is The Platform Rules, Digital Transformation for Product Companies, hosted by Propel.
We're at the halfway point with rule number 5, the user experience matters. Thank you for joining us. In this episode, VP, Principal Design Architect and Design Advocate at Salesforce, Adam Doty, imagines a world where business applications have a UX so ubiquitous and natural, it's virtually invisible. Got an expense report or ECO to approve? Send Slack a thumbs up emoji and you're done. Is this where B2B UX is headed? Dario and Adam discuss trends and more right now on The Platform Rules.
My guest today is Adam Doty, Vice President and Principal Design Architect at Salesforce. Adam, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Dario. Thanks for having me.
So, Adam, you've been in enterprise design here, enterprise software design for just under 30 years. The last 10 years have been with Salesforce. So you've seen a huge evolution in the design of software over this period. But let's start with the tail end of that. What are the big trends that you're working on today? What are the big things that are top of mind for you?
Yeah, I've seen lots of trends. It's almost hard to keep track. But I do think that a couple of the top of mind things and themes that I'm seeing are, first one is design ops. And if you haven't heard of that before, it's similar to DevOps. It's pretty popular. It's a pretty popular concept for a while now. And design ops is a really popular one I'm starting to see. Really, its goal, it's in service to organizing, you know, people, process, and ensure the craft is all orchestrated in service to designing great experiences. I think it's been a result of growing design teams and their further integration into their partner teams, like engineering organizations and product management organizations, which is great, right? Which is something I'm sure we can get into a little bit later. But design ops is definitely a very topical thing these days. The second thing that I'm starting to see, I've seen a building trend over the past, most of the time I've actually been at Salesforce, is the notion of low code or no code and developer experience. It might kind of seem like they go against each other, where we're designing interfaces where you actually don't need a whole lot of code to create great experience. You know, Wix and Squarespaces and folks like that have been doing it for a while, you know, drag and drop, build a website. But there is still code behind the scenes that needs to be, created in order just to create those great experiences. But designing these low code, no code experiences or these sort of platform design experiences is a trend that I'm also I'm seeing come up a lot across a lot of platforms, especially in my space, in the enterprise design platform space.
Okay.
Lastly, there's one more. Everything around sort of the topics of sort of inclusive design, ethical design, sustainable design. You'll hear a lot about conversation design. You know, wrapping your arms around a lot of these more soft and sort of less tangible, almost kind of sticky, kind of tough to navigate spaces as they relate to, you know, what we design, and more asking the question of, should the thing even be designed and created in the first place, right? And so, again, we can get into that a little bit later too. We refer to that whole package, if you will, that whole, you know, bucket of topics as relationship design. And it's sort of an exciting space that we're playing in right now.
All right. So three very different trends.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we can tackle them on the aggregate or individually, but you know, when you talk about design ops, it sounds like this is really more about getting the designers fully integrated with the rest of the team and fully immersed. Am I reading that right? Is that what's driving that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, rewind about 10 years when design ops wasn't really a thing, sort of the your average user experience designer was somewhat on their own to not only set themselves up for success with the right training, finding the right tools like Adobe Photoshop or Sketch, getting a license for them, getting, you know, scheduling design readouts with the product managers. All of this operational stuff was put on the individual designer to to sort of manage them themselves and their own workload, let alone the actual design that needs to be done, right? Like that in itself is a crushing amount of work that needed to be done, right? And there is just no space being left for the craft, for the user experience designer to do what they do best, which is sort of, you know, to design the product experiences. So design ops came in and sort of has been quickly growing to sort of elite, to kind of literally take that off the plate of the designer so they can do what they do best. So yes, and to connect in larger organizations, you know, like Salesforce and other companies like Microsoft and Oracle, they then are peers with DevOps, right? And they can work on, you know, product release cadence and cycles much more effectively and partner much more effectively.
Okay. So when you bring the DevOps, DesignOps together, you know, what's the ultimate impact on the org here? What's the change that's driving?
Much more healthier designers and much happier engineers and PMs.
Okay.
Deadlines aren't getting missed. At the end of the day, my observation has been a really effective design team really ensures that the designer on the team is able to show up in their best way with all their talents, right? And not having to like juggle four jobs, right? They're able to really focus on their craft while there is another team that's handling the operational aspects of making sure that the design in service to creating a product is well connected to engineering and product management. So it's just happier design, happier everybody, to be honest.
Okay. It just sounds more efficient, happier, all around, win-win.
An employee experience success KPI.
Okay. So let's move on to the second one that you mentioned, the low code, no code, and the developer experience. And you already brought it up that it feels like a little bit of a contradiction.
Yep.
But what's driving that trend there?
A couple things. From the perspective that I see it, for the low code and the no code experiences that are being designed and available out there today, you know, it's being done so that you can get more of these platforms and technology into the hands of non-designers so that they can then create and effectively design their own solutions. So again, back to my analogy of like Square and Wix and WordPress and things like that, like the citizen developer, the citizen designer, or the citizen person that wants to sort of put together their own blog or put together their own apps, they can do that now with these drag and drop tools, right? Like you can spin up a blank canvas, if you will, and you can drag a widget from the left to the right. When it lands on the canvas, it goes, great, what kind of image do you want to put here? And then what is the title? And then what is the body, right? Like, so you can start building your website with these widgets visually, really not seeing any code, right? And so it's sort of been a demand from the market that like more people sort of want to roll the sleeves up and design and build their own solutions, like their own websites or their own apps, if you will. And so, also on complicated platforms, you know, such as Salesforce or others, more designers are wanting to play a hands-on role, in creating these experiences. And the reason why I'm really sort of zero in on anything that's low code and no code, because it ends up being one of the places that designers on platforms show up the most. And it's where design is being done the most, whether it's a designer or a developer, an admin, know it or not, right? Like that act of assembling a page, that act of thinking what's on the page, am I putting the right things on the page? Are they in the right order? And then even if I put like this Dropbox on the page and I'm going to give a couple default options to the end user, are those the right options in there? We start to get a little bit into the ethical questions in a second, because what I mean by that is when you ask someone to select their, sexual preference, the options that you give them is a very intentional decision that you're making as a designer or as a maker, let's say, right? So this is all rampant with design decisions that are being made, right? No matter who you identify as, it's not just designers, but like this act of assembling a page and thinking through the unintended consequences of your decisions. This is all design. But it's all culminating on this canvas of this low code, no code experiences as you build up these apps.
So how do you go about deciding what then goes on the page? And I think there's two things. One, you talked about the ethical side. Yeah. So I mean, are you left to your own devices as a designer to go figure it out? Or is there a support group that helps or at least provides guideline? And then the user experience itself, just what design elements visually and from a usability standpoint, how do you bring it all together?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. So lots of answers to that. One of them is that first of all, there's always, you should not be going at this just with your hands in the air and like, I'm just going to go in and just start making stuff up. Like there needs to be a plan, right? Like, so the PM, usually product manager has a vision and there's a requirement specification and usually research has led to that point, right? And in this case, if we're talking about the moment we're going to start touching pixels and building an experience, let's just assume for a moment all the proper research has been done. You know your audience, you know your market. Like, let's just assume that part's been done, right? And so you know what needs to go on the page because you probably have requirements, you know your audience, and you know what kind of tasks they need to perform on that page. And so you're building that, you're building and designing and building that page in service to getting those tasks done. And it should be, you know, these decisions and these moments that got you here should have already gone through a series of step checks and balances, if you will. Design reviews, review sketches, review wireframes and mockups. But again, it's not a solo job, right? Like, so everybody should have a stake in these decisions and every milestone sign off, right? Engineering, product management, research, design team, to get to this point. Inevitably though, there is a moment where yes, you are by yourself at a moment, you know, deciding what's in some of these interactions. So like the dropdown I referenced, right? Like there is a human in there that's sort of typing in the values, if you will. And you know, that is just, you know, there's no perfect, yes, we can give guidelines, we can give templates, we can give recipes. But the moment that, you know, there is a human involved, mistakes can be made and it's all good. Part of what we do at Salesforce is that we have checks and balances along the way with design reviews. We have a very nice milestone that we call consequence scanning. And again, I can reference all this is in our blog and in our website at the end we can talk about, but it's a quick little workshop where you sort of pause for a moment and go, okay, here where we are based on the requirements, you've designed this page. Let's take a pause for a minute and think about all the ways where maybe this could go sideways, or maybe it could cause harm when we intended it to cause good. Are we asking all the right questions? Let's just think this through for a second, right? Versus just rushing to ship, right? Which I think is a lot of people, you know, that's where a lot of people get, you know, tripped up. They rush to ship and they just don't literally just pause for a minute and drink some tea and think about the unintended consequences of this thing for a minute.
So it sounds like the designer role is becoming more complicated. It's becoming more moving parts, more connection to the rest of the org. Yep. I mean, is this a good thing or a bad thing in your eyes? It sounds like a little bit of a double-edged sword here.
I can see why people might think it's a bad thing. They might feel like it's overwhelming or it's too much for a human to understand. But I would share that this is where designers thrive. I don't know how to describe it. They're great dot connectors. They're great at sort of balancing sort of, you know, the human needs and the human desire for the thing, and then also the technical, the pixel perfect aspects of the thing, right? And so this is actually a place where they thrive, right? So actually leaning in and investing in and, you know, ensuring that you have a designer on your team. A lot of this stuff might still be happening in your world and on your teams, but you might not have designers, right? There's people doing design and you have designers, right? It's all good. We want to make everybody better designers and, you know, better humans that can juggle these problems. But sometimes there is a moment where in the team's maturity and growth, you know, it's just everybody, not a few people can't do all the right things. You have to manage that growth. Right. And when you have an opportunity to hire a new person, think about the balance of the team, you know, look at the engineering designer ratio, are you within a range of good, right? Or is it, do you have a lot of engineers to one designer, right? And so just be thinking about these things, as you grow, but this is a place where sort of the design thinker and the designer does thrive, and they're actually happy in, even though it comes across being like a lot to handle.
Okay. I'm glad that they are happy when it all comes together. So you mentioned some of the low code platforms, low code, no code. As a marketer, obviously, or maybe not obviously, but for those of you who don't know, marketers use a lot of no code, low code software. And I can certainly tell the difference in my productivity when I'm using something that's been designed right. It's been designed for our needs. I never really thought of the drop-down menu, but as you're saying it, it does resonate with me when I'm using that and I see things that really speak to me. Why do some companies get it right and some companies get it wrong? What's the difference between the two?
Yep. That's a good question. I think low code, no code, and just enterprise software and design, like one of the trends that I'm seeing, if I could have squeaked in a fourth, it might be, something around, there's a lot of complexity underneath the hood, a lot of it. And it's a really hard design challenge to sort of, keep that complexity of what's being done underneath the hood on the platform, whether it be a complicated workflow, like you said, marketer, so you do a lot of probably journeys and if this, then that, and segment, whatever, right? Like journey, building out journeys and hit and go, right? And what we want to do is try to strike a balance of making that the most amazing frictionless experience that you're using as a marketer, while staying true to the complexities underneath the hood, right? And that's it. I've been a platform designer for, 15 of my enterprise design worlds. And that's been the most challenging design, challenge for me in my career is really designing to that, right? But it's probably been why it's been my most favorite challenge too, because it's been the most challenging and the most rewarding, when it pays off. Right. And I think that when companies don't recognize that we need to make sure that we're designing the most, really thinking about the human that's going to use this, that might not have had significant training. Like I like to design for that person that's going to pull the chair up and after not using this thing for like 4 months, right? Like you need to be thinking about like how you designing for those experiences and making those frictionless, because even if you use it every day, if you design for the person that uses it once every 4 months where their familiarity with it is not all that great, you optimize for that. Anybody that uses it every day is just going to benefit from that. If you try to optimize for the person that's using the platform every day, you're gonna cut corners, right? Because you're gonna be thinking, oh, they already know about this, I can cut corners, or they know this by muscle memory and that click flow, we can cut corners. The onboarding doesn't need to be all that good. The user in-app guidance doesn't need to be that good, right? And so, but if you optimize for the other end of the spectrum, you're just gonna benefit everybody.
Okay. That's very fascinating. I never really thought about that, how you have somebody who is just a lightweight loser versus a much more ingrained user. You want that different experience, but it certainly does make sense. On the provider side, so again, I know as a user, the better the usability, the happier I am. But let's face it, there's some solutions I use that I think the usability is awful, but I still use it because mm-hmm. either it's a capability that I can't replace or my other options are all just as bad. How much of an advantage is this to the actual provider? I mean, do you think enterprise platforms are going to sell more if there is a strong user experience for the end user? Or is it just because it's the right thing to do for those poor end users who you want to make their life easier?
Yeah, I'm grinning right now because this I think this might have been the since 2001, this is like the dollar bill question I stuck up on my wall and I look at every single morning. It's like the $1 million question, right? It's the whole, I mean, basically what you're asking is like, hey, listen, this is enterprise software for an employee that frankly has to use it. they got no choice. They got a job at a company and this is what we use, right? It's not like an app that you're downloading on your phone, a consumer app, and you're like, well, that was fun. I don't need it anymore. You delete it from your phone, right? Like, you have to use enterprise software as part of your work. And the age old debate and big question has been, you know, why should we invest in design if it's going to be a thing that my boss is going to tell me I have to use anyway, 8 hours a day, all day for 5 days a week, right? Like, why? What's the point? And so I think that definitely was the tone, and, you know, for better or for worse for a long time. But I think it definitely lately, you know, the past 10 years, if not shorter, there has been a pivot to focus on it. And I think it kind of goes back. Well, first, two things. One is, you know, a lot of people ask about how do we measure the value of investing in enterprise design, right? What are the right things to pay attention to? And, you know, in consumer apps, it's engagement. And I've seen people at times try to tie engagement to enterprise app usage. And I don't think that's the right thing, right? Sure, you can look at engagement, but they have to use it. So it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. So they have to go in there and log their cases. They have to log their sales calls. They have to do whatever they do, right? I think what you need to be looking at is sort of, is satisfaction, end user satisfaction, and time on task. I mean, frankly, the thing that I've often jokingly, when I first started at Salesforce, was like, my job here is to design this thing so well that you spend the minimum amount of time in it. Which just kind of seems weirdly backwards, right? Like, why would you want that, right? And like, that's like opposite of Facebook's and Twitter's tactic, right? Like, they want to design for engagement and people staying, right? Actually, I want to design for people get in, get back out in the field and go hang out with your customers, go blah, 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 right? Come into our product, log that call, then get back out as fast as possible. So now while you're in there and that time on task, we want it as short as possible. We want to remove all the friction, right? Do the things you need to do, log it, hit go, yes, yes, and then get back out, right? So I think a lot of that, you know, that's not true for every enterprise app out there. I think it's true for a lot of them, right? You know, I've seen a lot of them, and they tend to be sort of tools and tabs. You keep 2 to 6 of them open at any given time, and you're jumping around, logging your time, planning your trip, submitting your expenses, booking the next thing, logging your calls, right? And like, you kind of want to get in, get out as quick as possible.
Yep. I'm sure I'm going to mangle it, but it reminds me of, I think it's a Mark Twain quote where it's something along the lines of, if I had more time, I would have written a shorter letter. It takes time to make it simpler. I see where you're coming
from. An amazing amount of time to make it simpler. Yeah. Because if you just got a request, RFP, the request for, functional request doc, like I could just design that thing verbatim and it would not take very long at all, but it would not scale, it would not be accessible, it would not be translatable, it would not be localizable, you know, all the things, right? Because I'm literally just going to like hard code the whole thing to meet the spec verbatim, right? But my job as a platform designer is to maybe start there, and then I start looking for areas to decouple the actual feat, the way the thing needs to function, with then looking at how might this be scaled into like 10 different directions, right? How might it show up on, you know, device form factor size? How might it show up after being translated into right to left, left to right, upside down, whatever? Night mode to light mode, you know, all that.
Yeah. That's fascinating. So we don't have a whole lot of time left, but I want to switch gears a little bit. Yep. You mentioned earlier about how on the consumer side, it's all about engagement and driving more time on app, whereas you're trying to do less. So I want to go a little bit out of your area of expertise, hoping to get you a little bit out of your comfort zone if we can as well.
Sure.
And when I think of products and consumer products, they're increasingly becoming connected devices. What used to be a design team was entirely hardware, now has to incorporate software. Software design, very different than hardware design. And you know, this is the bread and butter who we deal with. I see personally more and more companies that talk about having to scale that software team now that their devices have become smart, and the difficulty of converging the hardware and software design. So do you have any background, or do you have any, you know, thoughts on how this is going to happen or how it's happening today in terms of just this convergence of design on the hardware and software side?
Yeah, obviously I don't work in hardware design. Our software has shown up on hardware devices, and I have a fair amount of experience with industrial design and creating things over my career. So I understand the constraints. So one thing is definitely the rise of both have been one of the reasons that has really pushed for, I'm going to start with design leadership and then go into experience. And so what I mean by design leadership is like, you know, the role of the chief design officer, the rise of the chief design officer, something that's kind of been in the press a lot, especially over the past 3, 4, 5 years, having this person advocate for great design, period. Doesn't matter if it's hardware, doesn't matter if it's software, doesn't matter if it's a service, doesn't matter if it's service design, doesn't matter what it is, but right, having this advocate at the level of the chief technical officer or a chief product officer to ensure that, you know, design, the best and great design is being done at the company has been a very critical and a very, it's been a very valuable, it's not the right word, but it's been valuable to our company for sure. But I've seen it be very effective in the market, right? The trends and what I've seen is the things that come to mind at the intersection of the two, a couple things is sort of frictionless communication design and thick and thin. So I can unpack all three of those. So what I mean by frictionless is that, like, when you're looking at a hardware device like an Amazon Alexa or a microwave or a stove and your phone and this and that, sort of a lot of the connected devices, ensuring that like the message, the voice and tone, the thing that's being communicated that shows up in the UI, and whether the UI is just a little LED screen or whether it's a full, you know, full resolution screen, doesn't really matter. But like it's the goal that thing was doing as it moves around these different devices, if they are all really connected and talking to each other, is consistent. It's the inconsistency is the number one thing that throws people off. Like, it's weird. It's one of the first things that us as humans pick up on, right? If something, like, especially a non-human thing, is not consistent in the way it talks back to us. The other thing that we're working around, our head, you know, is in a lot these days is notion of thick and thin design. Thin design is like sort of when you're completing a transaction in the flow of sort of an iMessage, if you will. You might have booked a ticket or updated your seat through literally messaging through your phone, right? Versus firing up the website and logging in and trying to navigate to where your ticket is and then changing all that. Like the heavy lift of designing for thick experiences in big CRMs is now being pushed to sort of a feed, if you will, or thin experience, right? And so that's a lot, I think a lot is going to be happening in that space, right? And this shows up in consumer use cases as well, right? How you talk to your Amazon Alexa or your, you know, or even your TV or to the remote, it's kind of a form of a thin experience, even though it's all vocal. But it's not a heavy, thick sort of fire up the web app and get something done experience.
Yeah, that's I never thought of it that way. And when I was thinking connected devices, I was going even further down, devices that I've had forever that are now connected.
Yep.
I'm interacting with the hardware less and less and the software even more. And there's some devices, something as similar or as simple as a smart plug. The whole reason for getting a connected one is I don't ever want to touch it. I don't even want to get off my couch to turn it on and off. So the software, it's vital.
Yeah, I have a very healthy skepticism of a lot of those right now because they're very buggy, right? Like it's actually ironically, you know, I bought 12 of that. So I'm going to do an experiment. I'm going to buy 12 of these smart plugs, smart switches, install them in the house. I spend more time futzing around with them on my phone because they keep going on and offline and no one knows what's going on and they keep talking to each other and not talking to each other. It's a hot mess, right? And ironically, I'm messing around with them 15 times more than it ever had been. It's pretty funny, but I'm just, you know, a designer at heart. I'm super curious, and my role in this whole experiment is to participate by playing around with them in hopes that eventually I will be giving feedback along with a million other people and make this whole connected experience better.
Oh yeah. I think that fast improvement loop, it's certainly out there. I see the difference year over year with a lot of these products. So I think that your wish is coming true, or at least it's on the path.
Exactly.
So I want to wrap up with a final question, just coming full circle back to where we started. You gave us three trends of where we are today. What do you think the future, what lies in the future here on the enterprise software design side?
I spoiled the ending with the thick and thin. I think that there, you're going to see a lot of enterprise software companies try to move into this thin realm, right? And trying to sort out what that means. And trying to push, actually, you know, again, it seems opposite, but really try to downplay these behemoth, you know, enterprise apps, these behemoth CRMs. I mean, I think we're always going to need them, depending on, you know, what the audience, who your audience is or who your primary user is. But I think you're going to start to see a lot of enterprise, software vendors and designers trying to be looking at this sort of thin space, right? Again, like even the plug, right? Like how might that show up in sort of this little blinking green light that's on my wall, right? Like I think starting to really think about some of those experiences right there. I think that's going to be one of the biggest trends personally.
Okay, great. So with that, we have to wrap. Adam Doty, Vice President and Principal Design Architect at Salesforce. Adam, I know you're very active on social media and you've got quite a few ways for people to maybe follow up and get more information. For the audience that does want more, how should they find you or how should they find where you're publishing today?
Yeah, you could find me at Doty on Twitter. So at Doty. At DOTI. You can find my awesome team at Salesforce UX. And you can also just go to salesforce.com/design and you can get access to all the things, our Twitter, all that fun stuff.
And it certainly is an awesome design team. Adam, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Platform Rules Digital Transformation for Product Companies. You can listen to this show and more at propelplm.com/podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, please share with a colleague, leave a review, or email us at podcast@propelplm.com with any feedback or questions. Until next time, Platform Rules.